from New Orleans. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Is it still possible for an independent artist to make a career in music?
People are more keen to ask somebody to come work for them when they're already in motion and not waiting for something.
And sort of this sad thing that happens when you're a freelance artist is you find you won't do a lot of the things that you say you're going to do unless you book a concert or you
Yes.
give yourself a deadline or you have a commission.
I really like this. I really enjoy this. But I'm bringing home like $60 after spending 5 hours away from my kids, my family.
My pa taught me from day one, A, never ever leave out of any bar without counting the money and never do a handshake deal.
PJ Morton, Aurora Neeland, Kiana Linnell, Robin Barnes, and others share their experiences chasing success. After the break. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. The music industry is a business, and musicians who ignore that fact do so at their own peril. Guests on Music Inside Out often talk about their strategies for success. But in music, as in all pursuits, success looks and sounds different, depending on the artist. PJ Morton is a singer, songwriter, and producer who, as a college student, won a Grammy Award for his work with India Arie. He's now a member of Maroon 5, and he heads his own record label. When we spoke with Morton, he was heading to the 2018 Grammy Awards as a nominee for his album Gumbo. Since then, he's released two more albums, including Christmas with PJ Morton. He told us about majoring in business at Morehouse College in Atlanta. But Morton also talked about the importance of being an attractive collaborator. Talent is crucial, but it also helps to be kinda sorta friendly.
I actually finished Morehouse in 3.5 years. So my junior year, I had one more semester left.
And so now you left Morehouse in Atlanta. You went on the road with Erykah Badu,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Now, I mean, how do these relationships really come about? You know, one day you're with India Arie, the next day, you know, you're touring with Erykah Badu, and then another day you're auditioning with Maroon 5. I mean, you know, you can't just say this just happened. Nobody
yeah.
will believe you.
Right. You know, and... But it's kind of true. I mean, it's not, you know, you meet people through the years and you don't know what they're going to mean to you later on down the line and how they're going to connect you to other things. But literally, India Arie was in my complex. It was a nice condo, but there was a piano in the lobby and I was playing the piano and she came down. This is before her first record came out, so I didn't know who she was. And we started talking about Stevie Wonder, and she sang Ribbon in the Sky, and we became friends. Her first album came out, did great. She got nominated for, 7 Grammys, lost them all to Alicia Keys.
Yeah.
That second year, I was like, hey, Andy, I got a song for you. Boom. Nominated for 2 Grammys and won them both that next year. Erykah Badu's music director, his father, was my father's best friend and best man in his wedding. So we were friends since kids, and he ended up becoming Erykah Badu's music director. And I'm graduating from Morehouse, and he was like, man, you want to come out with Erykah? And I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, my first tour, first time being on a tour bus, first time missing church on a Sunday. That was the weirdest thing to me when I started tour, was missing Sunday. Because I'm like, what do we do on Sundays? They're like, we got a show, man. What are you talking about? And that happened. You know, Maroon 5, the music director that came in, Adam Blackstone, had been a friend of mine for 10 years. And Questlove was called in to be the music director for Maroon. And he wasn't able to do it because this is 7.5 years ago. They just had gotten the Jimmy Fallon show. So he recommended a friend of mine, Adam. And Adam was like, hey, man, they're looking for a keyboard player, singer. And I was on a tour of mine, and I canceled the last 3 dates, went to L.A. So it really is... not me searching for these things. I wasn't looking to go on tour with Erykah Badu. I wasn't looking to work with India Arie. I wasn't looking to join Maroon 5. I don't think they were looking to add a member, you know? But these things were being, first of all, being ready, you know, being prepared and just being in right places at right times and being open to it. So, yeah.
No, it's true. I mean, you know, you're right. I mean, when opportunity comes knocking, your job is really to just be prepared, be ready for that moment.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, there's something very anti-American about this.
Yes, sure.
You know what I mean, this idea.
Right, right.
Because most people, they, you know, I mean, they go to school, they learn how to play an instrument, they become whatever, and they hope that by sheer talent, you know what I mean, that somehow they're going to be able to knock on a door that's going to open for them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so when they hear your story or stories like it, because there are a million stories like that,
yeah,
you know, then I wonder how, whether it's disheartening, because it's sometimes it feels as if there's a big clique out there, and if you're not in that clique,
yeah,
you're out.
But you're not in that clique till you are in it, you know? So it's like, I wasn't in any clique. I met India not being connected to anything. What I will say to anybody who has a dream is to never stop working. People are more keen to ask somebody to come work for them when they're already in motion and not waiting for something. I was a musician, you know, who had been playing for years when I got an Erykah Badu call. So I was in motion all of these times. Like I said, I was on a tour promoting my album Walk Alone when I got the call for Maroon 5. So always be in motion. Don't be waiting for somebody to come to you. But there definitely is no science to it. You just got to stay busy and be ready.
PJ Morton's particular talent as an artist and entrepreneur is knowing how to make old songs new again. One of the most popular selections on his album Gumbo was a cover of the Bee Gees classic, How Deep Is Your Love, which he sang for us right here at Marini Studios.
I know your eyes in the morning sun. I feel you touch me in the pouring rain. And the moment that you wander far from me, I wanna feel in my arms again. And you come to me on a summer breeze. Keep me warm in your love, then you softly lean. And it's me you need to show. How deep is your love? Is your love how deep is your love? I really mean to learn. Cause we're living in a world of fools, breaking us down. When they all should let us be, we belong to you and me. See, I believe in you. You know the door to my very soul. You're the light in my deepest, darkest hour. You're my savior when I fall. And you may not think that I care for you, when you know down inside I really do. And it's me you need to show. How deep is your love? Is your love? How deep is your love? I really mean to learn. Cause we're living in a world fools, breaking us down, when they all should let us be. We belong to you and me.
That was PJ Morton with How Deep Is Your Love, a song originally made famous by the Bee Gees. We're talking about lessons from the music industry on Music Inside Out. Singer Robin Barnes earned a master's degree in business at the University of New Orleans. Since then, she's launched a fitness and lifestyle enterprise, as well as a performing career in both gospel and secular music. In 2016, Barnes released an EP called The Songbird Sessions, which reached the top 5 on the Billboard Jazz chart. But early in her career, she had trouble landing work in New Orleans. Turns out, there's no substitute for marketing savvy.
At the time, I thought it's a me thing. And I would audition for people and I would do all these things. And the minute they would go, okay, cool, yeah, you can take care of it. And we'll just do it on a handshake. And my pa taught me from day one, A, never, ever leave out of any bar without counting the money and never do a handshake deal. And again, I had just finished with my master's in business. So I was all like, you know, green. I'm like, oh, I'll email you my contract. And people would be like, you know what? I think we found somebody else. Or they, you know, they would, it's that New Orleans thing where no one never tells you no, but then all of a sudden you just stop getting calls or stop getting responses. So they would just be like, oh, sure, babe, email me. Yeah, girl, email me tomorrow, okay? And I'm gonna get back to you. And then in hindsight, I should have been like, no, that dude was totally lying. And because they would never get back. And when I kept getting no's and no's, and I mean, it would be even times where men would try to, like, you know, suggest things for a gig, and I'm like,
no way.
Oh way.
Really?
Oh way.
And it's casting couch.
Oh yeah, especially with the whole, oh, let give me a hug, baby. I'm like, no, I'm good, sir, thank you so much. And I'm a hugger, so that should tell you something. Oh, come to the club at 11 o'clock at night, you know. And you're like, cool. And I bring my one of my brothers and my dad, and you know, no one ever liked that. But
so what'd you do?
I made up my own gig.
Really?
This was the dawn of social media, and I was working for a nonprofit, and I was trying to do the 9-to-5 job, and I was doing great, but I was not happy. And I was like, you know, it's so funny. I'm working for this nonprofit, and they're telling me how they value me for marketing. Yet, why am I not doing it for myself? Or try? Why don't I just try? If I can show them I can pack a room, let's see what happens. And again, I'm one of 7. I am one of 21 first cousins.
Gee.
Yeah, it's a big family.
That's a classroom.
Yeah, it's a classroom. So I made a Facebook post, and I invited all my cousins, all my friends, and I went to this bar, and it was cocktails with a twist or something like that. It was right there on St. Charles. And I told them, I was like, if you just pay me this small budget, I will show you what I can do, and then we can renegotiate a bigger price. And they were like, sure, this place is dead, good luck, you know. And I came in, and the first 5 weeks I always had no less than 52 people, and I would personally count. And I was so proactive that they eventually just gave me the gig and also gave me a raise, which was great. It was so much harder to be a singer trying to do something in a world of this industry's male, let's be real. But at the same time, those who have come before us, who have, oh my God, their struggle was way worse. You know what I mean? And they've powered through. And it's now my challenge with people in my generation to make it easier for the next generation.
Robin Barnes now calls herself the Songbird of New Orleans. She's trademarked the term, and she's chosen this 1929 Broadway showstopper as her theme song. Here she is with Great Day.
When the skies went dark came Noah's Ark, amen. When lions roared came Daniel's Lord, amen. Lord help those who pray, and on judgment day, if you believe ye shall receive, amen. When you're down and out, lift up your head and shout, there's gonna be a great day. Angels in the sky promise that by and by, there's gonna be a great day. Gabriel will warn you, some early morning you will hear his horn a rootin' tootin', it's not far away. Hold up your hands and say, it's gonna be a great day. When you're down now, lift up your head and shout, it's gonna be a great day. Angels in the sky promise that by and by, it's gonna be a great day.
Gabriel will warm you some early morning. You are his on a route into that. It's not far away. Hold up your hands and say it's gonna be a great day. Down now, lift up your head and shout, it's gonna be a great day. Angels in the sky, I promise that by, it's gonna be a great day. Gabriel will warn you some early morning. You are his heart, run into that. It's not far away. Hold up your hands and say, it's gonna be a great day.
With singer Robin Barnes with Great Day. This is Music Inside Out, and we're asking our guests to describe how they chase success in the music industry. Coming up, how to get along with your bandmate, Sylvan Esso, after the break. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Most of our guests say that a successful musician is a working musician. Period. And yet bands and other musical partners must consider additional measures for longevity in show business. Working together means embracing a common aesthetic. They've got to agree that the music they make together is worthwhile. Before forming the electronic pop duo Sylvan Esso, Amelia Meath and Nick Sanborn were based in North Carolina and touring with other acts. One day, Meath challenged Sanborn to produce a remix of a song she'd written for a three-part harmony group called Mountain Man. It may be no accident that the title of her song was Play It Right.
When the songs come together so close to my face, it's no wonder we wonder what's taking place. Oh, I feel like an animal in the night. Play it right. Play it right, 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 play it right. Oh, if my ears were as big as the ocean, I could hear all of your delicious.
I was just hoping that he would do a good remix, which is rare and hard.
Why?
To find. Because, well, it's a strange
thing to ask somebody.
Yeah,
to do.
Remixes in general are strange. I don't really like them very much. With remixes, people are just like, oh, you're doing that in that song. I like this theme. I'm going to just make this theme bigger because you already handed it to me.
Or worse, I'm going to make it just sound like me and erase the thing that was interesting about your song in the first place.
Yeah.
That is a very interesting observation.
Indeed.
Yeah,
I actually gave the song to a bunch of different people to remix at that time.
And only one of them's in this room right now.
And with that, let's hear a little bit of it.
When the sounds come together so close to my face, it's no wonder we wonder what's taking place. Oh, I feel like an animal in the night. Play it right. Play it right.
It appeared on your first album, right?
It did.
Sylvan Esso. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. It did. It took me a long time to give it back to her.
A year.
It's embarrassing now. But the reason it was so hard is because the magic of their band was held in with its fragility. Mountain Man. Sorry. Yes. So every time I tried to start working on it, I felt like every time I added something, it was almost like subtraction by addition. Like I just kept kind of ruining what made the song special in the first place. And I all of a sudden realized, oh, if I use their voices as the textures in the song, maybe that'll open it up and I'll be able to find how I think it could be, you know, more of what it already seems like it wants to be. And so it was, I had to like expand the quiet down to even more quiet and the loud to even more loud to figure out kind of where I fit in there.
And so the remix, does a remix all automatically suggest that the person, that it's a song to be danced to?
No, mm-hmm. Not at all.
No, it just means a reworking.
And you were pleased with it, Amelia.
I was.
So how did this one speak to you, more than the others?
It had, you know, I'm going to do that inarticulate musician thing where you say it just felt good.
No, I understand that. Yeah. I understand that. You know, one thing that a musician said not long ago that was just beautiful was, I love this for reasons I cannot understand.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And that's what we're all searching, like reaching for when you're writing songs, is that feeling of magic.
Musical compatibility is vital to the lifespan of a band or musical act. It also helps if bandmates are compatible offstage, creating music together, touring together, being together. It's like marriage. Sylvan Esso tours constantly, and in 1 year played New Orleans 3 times. Offstage, they share a deep and abiding love of video games, and one game in particular.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've heard your cries, and we apologize for the delay. Our research team here at Super Brothers has been preparing our latest psychosocial audiovisual experiment. A meandering, mythopoetic adventure known as Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery EP. We've also been slowly preparing you for its imminent arrival.
Play the game long enough, and the name Sylvan Esso kinda sorta makes sense.
You are now among the initiated. We will meet again at the appointed time, when both day and night are in balance.
I'm just reading off the website.
Perfect.
It's music-inspired adventure video game that features, quote, a lone woman warrior on a tragic quest in a lush, haunted mountain wilderness.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Indeed.
How far have you gotten in this game?
I didn't even know that the warrior was gendered. It's dope. Yeah.
It's a beautiful game.
It's a beautiful game. Mm-hmm. It's linked to the cycles of the moon.
Yeah.
So it takes you a long time to level the actual moon. So you have to wait cycles.
Yeah.
That seems very feminine.
It's dope. Really, really cool.
Yeah.
It's a great game.
And so you've gone through all the cycles?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Amelia's
really good at video games. That's a secret of this, yeah. That particular game, though, is just, it's like a work of art. It's this beautiful, the artwork is lush while at the same time feeling very strangely ancient and digital.
Indeed.
The story is really beautiful and strange. The music is gorgeous.
The music's by Jim Guthrie.
Jim Guthrie.
Did a wonderful job.
But in this game, I mean, there is a Sylvan Sprite.
True.
There's not a Sylvan Esso that
True.
I know of.
No.
Right? Is Esso anything other than Standard Oil, or?
We just wanted a silly.
Sylvan Esso just rolls off the tongue.
It kind
of
does.
We wanted this idea of kind of a mythical creature that wanders around in the woods. And that was an idea that we were really drawn to, that if our band could make someone think of kind of a mythical creature that may or may not be real in the woods, hence the Sylvan, then that's kind of how we wanted people to subconsciously think about us, as this strange otherworldly thing in the forest.
That was Nick Sanborn and Amelia Meath. Together, they make Sylvan Esso. Talking about the business of making music, which brings us to multi-instrumentalist and composer Aurora Neeland. She lives in New Orleans and embraces a wide variety of musical styles, including traditional jazz, cabaret, experimental pop, and theatrical sound design. Neeland studied at the Oberlin Conservatory of Music in Ohio and L'École Internationale de Jacques Lecoq in Paris. Her musical contributions spring from a deep well of talent, but it's her work ethic that's made her accomplishments possible.
And sort of this sad thing that happens when you're a freelance artist is you find you won't do a lot of the things that you say you're going to do unless you book a concert, or you give yourself a deadline, or you have a commission.
Neeland's most recent album, The Monitor, Kind Humankind, is a work that she says no one asked her to make. And for that reason, she says the recording took longer than usual to complete. And yet it was worth the effort. Here she is at Marini Studios singing Arcade Lights.
Three little birdies sat on a tree, praying to heaven, glory be. Thunder, lightning struck below. They each wondered who'd be the first to go. Two little angels sat up on high, watching them birdies, oh, watching them about to die. One angel said, "Sister, will you forgive me? If I should fall to save those birdies three." Mighty God sat up above, watching his angels, oh, watching them fall for love. God, would he save them? No, no, not he. He struck down his angels for saving those birdies three. Does he get lonely on the Lord's day? God, will you miss me when I walk away? Will you remember when you can't find me? How you struck down your angels for saving those birdies three? When I'm gone, will you miss me? When I'm gone, forgive me.
That's Aurora Neeland on accordion, playing Arcade Lights. Neeland taught herself to play the accordion, the piano, the saxophone, the clarinet, and other instruments. She leads two or more bands, and she's released 5 albums. Perhaps she works so hard because as a child in California and Colorado, she watched her father, Daniel Neeland, work to support a family of 7.
I don't have a lot of memories of my father at that age, at a younger age. And it's not because he was he ran away and didn't want to support the family. It was because we were quite poor. And so he would go to work in Denver and he would work during the day as an archivist. He would take a nap in the car. Then he would sometimes go to band practice, I think, and then work a night job.
Gee.
And like sleep over either in the place where the night job was as a janitor. And then he would wake up and work a day job again. So he was sort of the figure that he brought home food on the weekend. It was like, the food guy's here, you know? And you knew what day of the week it was by how little food there was. Like on Fridays, it was always like, I'm going to the neighbors. You know, it was that kind of experience. So there was a lot of instruments in the house always. And there were like kind of hand-me-down things. And there was a piano. And my mother taught classical piano.
And what instrument did your dad play?
My dad actually played saxophone. I didn't hear him play it that much when by the time I came along, but he played saxophone. He also sang and had a rock band. So he played some keyboards in a rock band and was like the singer for a band called Accelerator.
And when Neeland's father did spend time with his children, it was spectacular.
Some of the few memories I have of him as a young child is like on Easter, for instance, we would, in Colorado, we went to Red Rocks and he had this old boom box that he brought and he would like wake us up at dawn. And we were not raised religiously at all. But Easter was like that idea of this kind of like rebirth and renewal and spring is coming. And he would like woke my brother and I up at sunrise, this is a thing, and he would carry this boombox, and then like we would just sit in the middle of nature, and he would play "Rite of Spring."
Wow!
And that is the thing he also did another time when we lived in California, also on Easter, where we would hike up this kind of rolling bluffs on Highway 1 that looks out over the ocean.
Exactly.
And play "Rite of Spring" on this really crappy boombox.
Rite of Spring is this is not like pastoral, beautiful, you know what I mean, kind of serene music. This is like very challenging, scary sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, dissonant kind of music that freaked a lot of French people out when they first heard it, like at the beginning of the last century.
Yeah.
So like, how did you interpret that as a young person?
I think this is the thing with music in general. As a young person, if you're not exposed to like, this is good, this is bad, this is correct, this is incorrect, it becomes colors and experiences. I recall like kind of lying there and like, you know, watching the sunrise and like hearing these stories, these sonic stories and textures, which really I think is for me, the best way for music to be experienced.
That's Leonard Bernstein and the New York Philharmonic performing Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. We're talking about what it takes to survive in the music business. The necessary talent, the compatibility, the street smarts, the shared aesthetic, and the hard work. Coming up, Big Frida dreams big. Stay with us. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out. Most people who appear on this show have devoted their lives to music, which means they're talented, sometimes lucky, often frustrated, and hoping to make enough money to stay in the business. But the business is constantly changing. For more than a dozen years, Scott Aegis directed programs and marketing at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation. He also started the Sync Up Conference, which gave independent artists valuable business advice.
The record business has always been a gamble.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, just kind of a rule of thumb that record companies hope that 1 out of 100 acts that they may sign will actually turn a profit and be a hit that will be kind of the tentpole for the whole company and keep everything afloat.
Yes.
And so that part of the business has been a huge gamble. What you're talking about is how everybody is desperately trying to figure out what the new paradigm
is.
And how to make money from this stuff when people aren't buying records. They're accessing records through maybe Pandora, which is primarily a free service, or they're accessing music through YouTube, which is a totally free service. The number one music destination on the internet is YouTube.
I didn't know that.
True. And so if YouTube is free to us consumers, how do the copyright owners make any money from the use of their copyrighted material? How does a musician, or a record label for that matter, make money when people are listening to their song 55 times a day and not paying anything?
Yeah.
Well, that becomes very challenging.
Good point.
So if you're a recording artist or a musician or a songwriter, you know, it's futile to aim for the big hit because the chances are so slim. What you have to try to figure out is sustainability. How do you have a life? If you know enough about it, how can you cobble together enough revenue streams to provide for yourself and your family? Because if you think that you're going to get rich and famous, you're wrong. I mean, most of the time you're wrong.
Let me ask you,
not to be cynical, but just you know, reality.
Well, let me ask you this, an even more fundamental question. How do you know that you've got the right stuff? You know, to borrow a term from Tom Wolfe. I mean, even to make a living, not a big hit or superstar status, but how...
You can't do this to please somebody else. It won't work. You know, you have to write music and play music that is meaningful to you as a person and comes as an artistic expression. That's something that you are not doing by choice. It's something that you are doing because you are absolutely compelled by whatever is within you to do it. And you have to be doing it for those reasons and to please yourself. If you make music for the purpose of pleasing other people, it will be patently transparent that that's what you're trying to do, and it will fail. And so you're wasting your time. You're wasting everybody's time. You've interviewed a lot of musicians on your show, many of whom are not rich and famous.
Right.
You know, you've had some who are,
mm-hmm.
and a lot who aren't.
Who are stunning.
Yes.
Yes.
Because they're making music that's personal to them and expresses something that, while it's also personal to them, it's universal. And it's expressing something that touches you in your soul and me in mine. And that's the magic thing about music. It's why we all want to be a part of it. It's because of that magic that happens. I mean, the business stuff is how we figure out how to make a living. What we live for is the magic.
We asked Scott Aegis about some of the practical decisions artists must make. For instance, when is it time to get a manager?
Really, what you want is to find each other at the time when it makes sense. My rule of thumb is, until you're really not going to miss that 10 to 15% of your gross earnings, typically,
yes,
don't even think about it, because you can't afford it.
You can't afford it.
And if you can't afford it, chances are you don't have enough work to make it worth either of your while. So you're not there yet. The other way to think about it from the education standpoint is, I am a big believer in self-management. Learn how it should be done so that if it comes to a point when you are of interest to a manager and you can afford it and the manager can afford you, then when you are in a position to oversee the manager's work, you'll be talking from a position of knowledge. Because as a manager, if you're dealing with an artist that thinks they know what they're talking about but truly doesn't, that's nothing but annoying.
That's a bad time. You're right.
But a manager loves an artist who has the get up and go, the determination, the willingness to educate oneself, and the willingness to put in an equal amount of work.
Scott Aegis was the longtime director of programs and marketing at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation.
Big Frida was born Freddie Ross Jr. and still uses that name sometimes.
You know, most of the time when I'm, you know, handling business or, you know, doing the things that I need to do for my music career, I'm Freddie by day and I'm Frida by night. Because, you know, when Freddie gets into the office, Freddie don't play.
As a queen diva of bounce, Frida helped popularize an entirely new genre of music. And over a more than 20-year career, he's become a recording artist, author, reality television star, and collaborator with chart-topping acts. But Big Frida wants more. Here he is with Galactic and their song, Double It.
You know, and so what does double it mean? Double it.
Whatever you want to do, just, you know, double it. I want to double all the things that I've done in my life, you know, and make them flourish even more.
Exactly. Like, whatever dream you have, double it.
Yes.
Whatever expectation you have, double it.
For real.
Yeah. However hard you want to work, double it.
Definitely.
Talking about chasing success in the music industry. And Big Frida says that bounce can be even bigger than it is now. It's a matter of visualization.
On charts, categories at awards. You know, I have a vision to see it everywhere. And, you know, we already have created a lane of our own, a music that is special to New Orleans, you know, just like a lot of other music here in New Orleans. And we just want to continue to get its recognition and to let people know all around the world that we are hardworking artists, you know, just like anybody else.
Just like anybody else. I hadn't even thought of that.
Yes.
As a dream that you would, you know, I mean, have a Grammy Award for bounce.
Exactly.
Why not?
That's what I'm pushing for.
It makes all the sense in the world.
It does.
Wow.
It's a sound of music. People know it all around the world, even in other countries. And it deserves the recognition just like any other type of music. They have all these different awards, country music, you know, rock, jazz, everything, R&B.
That's exactly right.
Bounce deserves it.
That was Big Frida speaking with us at Marinee Recording Studio. Jazz singer Kiana Linnell came late to a career in music, but she could write a self-help book on the power of visualizing success. Linnell is a classically trained vocalist. She began her professional career singing with a cover band in Baton Rouge. It was a start.
Every Thursday night from like 6 to 9, happy hour, $5 entry, going in, sweating and like dance parties, Zydeco,
Zydeco,
R&B,
an R&B
old
band.
School R&B, like
what, like LTD, like Aretha,
yeah,
like,
Aretha,
Anita Baker,
yep,
like Chaka Khan, like Rufus,
Chaka Khan, Rufus, yeah, it was really a good band, it was really fun,
yeah,
really really fun. That band to the T is where I learned how to command a stage and get an audience and have them with you on that journey.
Love can't wait till tomorrow. Somebody say it with me, right here. Love can't wait. wait till tomorrow. Show somebody that you care. Say it again, say love can't wait till tomorrow. Woo-hoo. Times get hard, life moves real fast. It might slip away. Don't give up your chance to let somebody know how much they matter to you today. Yeah, somebody say that love can't wait till tomorrow.
Exactly. And so the Baton Rouge music scene at that time, give us an understanding of what that was like. Is it like New Orleans where
Baton Rouge is totally different.
Everywhere?
The scene is a lot smaller. You know, everybody knows everybody. There's not a big jazz scene in Baton Rouge. And the scene is kind of, I hate to say, it's kind of segregated in Baton Rouge. Totally. So, I call it my Chitlin' circuit work because we were doing lots of little hole in the walls on Plank Road, you know, and that's just straight black. That's the black side of town.
Sure. North Baton Rouge going all the way up through Clinton.
And there were like four little spots that we would do. Mm-hmm. And I learned how to give it to them. And I learned a lot about myself. And I learned that I was like, okay, I really like this. I really enjoy this. But I'm bringing home like $60
right
after spending 5 hours away from my kids, my family. I'm paying the babysitter, all of that, you know, and I just gave these people the show of their life. Like they would talk about me like I was Whitney Houston. I swear, like I was like, okay, I'm kind of good. But I can't, like I want to be better. I want to be able to provide for my family doing this. I really sat down and was like, okay, but at this point, I'm almost divorced. I have two kids. I have a house. And at this time, I'm teaching also. I had quit AT&T and I'm teaching because that was a part of my transition of how do you become a musician that's able to tour? And I was like, okay, so all these people I'm meeting, a lot of them teach and then they tour in the summer. So I was like, I went and started teaching elementary music and beginning band. I was like, okay, I'm kind of middle-aged. I can't be Beyonce. What can facilitate me being an international touring artist? What can facilitate me singing at the Kennedy Center, singing at the Met? So I started looking at people that I admire, and I've always loved Diane Reeves, always loved Patty Austin, loved, you know. So I was like, these people sing all kinds of music. But when you look at their criteria, they're called jazz artists.
That's true.
So I was like, okay, this is where I need to gravitate to. I have to become a jazz artist because you're not just a singer, you're a musician that is able to learn music, create music, manipulate music on a higher musical level. This is going to be home.
In December 2018, Kiana Linnell made her stage debut at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. Here she is in our studio with Kyle Roussel on piano singing Is You Is or Is You Ain't My Baby.
Baba do way, baba let day out. Sweetie, day, 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 I got a man who's always late every time we have a date, but I love him. Said I love him, so I'm gonna walk right to his gate, see if we can make this thing straight, 'cause I want him. I need to have him. So I say, is you is or is you ain't my baby? Way you're acting lately makes me doubt. You is still my baby, baby. Or has the flame in your heart gone out? See, a man is a creature. Always seems kind of strange. When you think you found him out, he's gone and made a change. So I said, is you is?
yes or is you ain't my baby. Maybe baby's found somebody new, or is you is my baby so true. Say-la-da-day, say-la-da-day, say-la-da-da-da, boo-boo-dwee-dee-dee-da-da. Say-la-da-day the way, say-la-way-dee-ya-dum, say-dee-dee-da-da-da, say-dee-da-da-da-ya-dum-dee-da-da-ba-dum, way. Maybe baby's found somebody new, or is you is my baby. Said I want you to be my baby, it's you is my baby, baby too.
That was Kiana Linnell and Kyle Roussel on piano. And you've been listening to Music Inside Out. Our show was produced by Lynette Johnson, Jason Ryan, Garrett Pittman, Margaret Howes, Lars Howell, Justin Armstrong, Flawn Williams, and Paul McDonald. Music Inside Out is produced in partnership with WWNO. To hear more from the musicians featured in this hour, go to our website at musicinsideout.org. And don't forget to like us on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Major support for Music Inside Out comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection. Music Inside Out also receives support from the Ruth U. Fertel Foundation, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, the Pinkalope Foundation, Baba Jim Istanbul Studios and Mastering, Adam Newman Designs, Shop Nadine Blake, and WWNO. Donations to Music Inside Out are tax deductible, thanks to our partnership with National Performance Network. For more information about how you can support our program, please go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.